This is The Guardian.
Today, after the death of one of LA's most loved rappers, an investigation reveals just how far the Los Angeles police went to target him.
Y'all make some noise for Nipsey Hussle. I say it again, make some noise for Nipsey Hussle. Put my right hand to God,
shine on these bras. Nipsey Hussle's funeral was a major event for Los Angeles. It just attracted so many celebrities and fans from across the world.
Celebration, baby, let's do it!
Stevie Wonder actually performed at the funeral. Snoop Dogg was there, Meek Mill, Puff Daddy. Obama sent a letter that was read that was really emotional for people and just meant a lot to his family, of course.
From the 44th President of the United States, Barack Obama. Sent in regarding the life and celebration of Nipsey Hussle. While most folks look at the Crenshaw neighborhood where he grew up and only see gangs, bullets, and despair, Nipsey saw potential. He saw hope.
Nipsey represented so much to the community. He was really thought of as this person who did not take his money and run.
Sam Levin is a correspondent for Guardian US based in Los Angeles. He's written about Nipsey Hussle's legacy.
I remember after he passed away, I was talking to folks in the neighborhood where he grew up, and everyone said some version of the same thing, which was that he had this huge success, obviously, with his career, and he stayed in the community. You know, he kept his money here, he invested in the community, and he didn't want to leave the neighborhood where he grew up. And so he really was a role model and an inspiration to so many people.
It wasn't just his fans, other musicians or former presidents who praised Nipsey after his death. The Los Angeles police did too, including their chief.
I could not believe it. So I am devastated with that because this is a voice that was trying to help and was investing in his community.
Behind the scenes, though, the LAPD had secretly put Nipsey Hussle in the crosshairs of a controversial high-tech intelligence tool. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, the story of Nipsey Hussle and what it tells us about the future of policing. Just a heads up, this episode contains strong language. Sam Levin, for people who had no idea who he was, who didn't follow his music, sum it up for me. Who was Nipsey Hussle?
Nipsey Hussle was a Grammy-nominated rapper and entrepreneur. He was sort of a new iteration of the LA gangster rap.
I'm from Westside, California. They run a bone. Ask you where you from and check your tats under your clothes.
Nipsey Hussle grew up in the Crenshaw district of South LA, and he came from a neighborhood that was deeply affected by gang culture as well as gang violence.
Get killed for who they roll with and chose to keep inside their circle. Satan sitting on your sofa. Same nigga that shot you was the one you used to smoke with. Cold shit, my whole clique notorious.
He grew up and spent some time on 60th Street, where this gang called Rollin' 60s, which is a Crip gang, was very active. And he became involved in that when he was around 14 years old.
They say I be doing too much. I just do my stuff. Yeah, I just do my stuff. Hustle, hustle, blue laces, shell cases.
And what did he say about that part of his life? I mean, how did he think of it?
He talked about getting jumped at a young age, and so being a part of a gang was in some ways, you know, a form of protection and was just about sort of community. And, you know, some folks describe it as just kind of family there. But obviously life was very difficult, and this just became a sort of inevitable part of his life as a very young person.
What did that South LA neighborhood mean to him? Like, how did he talk about it?
Yeah, the neighborhood meant everything to him. South LA, the Crenshaw District, this was his life, and it's deeply embedded in all of his music. One of his first songs that played on the radio in LA was called Hustle in the House, which was released in 2008.
I'm coming straight off a slump, a crazy motherfucker named Nipsey. I'm turned up because I grew up in the...
And there he talks specifically about the rolling 60s and just coming straight off of Slauson and, you know, saying how he paid taxes to these corners and put in the work. And he's really just talking about hustling to make it on this street corner. And it was kind of like an anthem for his neighborhood.
And I'm aware I'm a side boost the economy. Pay taxes to these corners and putting it work as a policy. It's white chalk on the corners. It's yellow tape on the gate.
And Sam, that hustling that you mentioned there and that Nipsey talked about in his music, is that where his name comes from?
Yeah. Hustle was a reference to the fact that he was a hustler. Like, there's all these stories from just him as a young kid, you know, hustling in the streets, you know, finding all these ways to make money and to survive in the streets and, you know, selling CDs out of the trunk.
Cops was an immigrant, lifestyle illegit, but now I own businesses. Started out the trunk, ended up at the dealership. All gold, roly, black face, no blemishes. Legend in my city because I grind so vigorous. If I show my face...
And he was just very interested in, like, entrepreneurship at a super young age.
I'm really out here on some shit. You should take a flick. Balling on my own 10 toes. So the difference is I call shots, never ask for permission, man. I got a lot of big plans in my vision, and I ain't failed yet. About a dollar, hell yes.
His brother Sam Askedom told me this story about how when he was young, he actually learned how to build his own computer. He got, like, different parts that he had collected and actually built his own PC because he wanted to be able to record his songs.
This is for my bad girls, this is for them good guys, this is for my grandma, this is for that West Side.
You mentioned his brother there, Sam, who you interviewed recently. Tell me about him and what kind of relationship he and Nipsey had.
His brother, Sam, was a huge part of his life.
My brother, when I first heard the music, I definitely was proud and surprised, and I'm like, bro, this is, you're super talented, and whatever I can do, I definitely want to be a part of this.
They obviously grew up together. Sam was 3 years older than Nipsey and, you know, became a kind of business partner with him. And they would set up and just sell, like, merchandise and clothing, boxers, things like that, just on the corner of Crenshaw and Slauson, and just hustling any way they could.
Sam, Nipsey's neighborhood was also one that was very heavily policed. How much contact did he have with them throughout his life?
So the Los Angeles Police Department has long had a very, very heavy presence in South Los Angeles. You know, this is the neighborhood famous for the riots that occurred after Rodney King was killed by LAPD.
Steadily. With me is one of the protesters. He cannot give his name, but tell me, what exactly, how do you feel about all of this?
I feel that it's a great travesty of justice. I feel that there is an undercurrent of racism and that the system is rotten to the core. And
specifically, the 77th Precinct is the division of LAPD that was responsible for policing the neighborhood where Nipsey had his businesses and where Nipsey grew up. And Nipsey and his family and his friends all had frequent contact with LAPD. And LAPD had just a lot of interest in Nipsey and his business efforts from the very sort of start. His brother Sam talked to me about how they used to sell stuff on the street corner, and you know, LAPD would come over and hassle them.
We were selling shirts and socks and clothing and shoes across the street at the Louisiana Fried Chicken. They would come and arrest us, cuff us, and take all of our stuff. And we looking up as this happened, like, damn, we just lost $1,000 worth of merchandise. We're like, damn, y'all not doing this to nobody else. They're selling fruit on the corner, everything. You doing something legit? Nah, it's not legit till you get a location and pay taxes like everybody else. You got to pay rent.
And so they really tried to go legit and do it the way that the city said they should be doing it. And so they opened a store on the street corner, which was initially called Slauson Tees. And that sort of sold this brand, Marathon Clothing, that Nipsey and his brother and others had created as another sort of revenue stream in addition to his music. And that store expanded, became super popular as Nipsey's career, you know, rose and as his music was becoming more and more successful. And eventually in 2017, he opened the Marathon store at the corner of Crenshaw and Slauson.
Finally, we were able to open up the flagship store of the Marathon closing. The city councilmen came, all the people in the community came, like, man, we know where you guys started from, where you guys came from, we're so proud of you.
And let me just say, on behalf of the city of Los Angeles, this is the biggest grand opening of any business anywhere in Southern California today.
It's been a long time coming. This is for y'all, this is for us.
And that was just a huge destination for folks from across the world, and of course, a major source of pride for people in the neighborhood and across LA.
It became like a mecca for anybody out of state coming into LA. They had to come there. It was becoming super successful.
And it did feel like to Sam that, you know, the more successful he and Nipsey got, the more police wanted them gone, the more police wanted to take them on. His perception was that LAPD was really interested in stopping them and was in some ways almost angry about the success.
Their whole goal was just to shut it down. Even though positive things were happening in the store, you think that this is something that y'all should be happy about. But instead, they took it as, we lost. Like, somebody from the neighborhood is successful and legit, and we got to shut this shit down. This is giving a bad example. For us, it felt like it's a cat and mouse game. The agenda was, whatever they're doing over there, crush it and stop it. Not, is it legal or is it not? It was just, even if it's legit, stop it.
And so as their business became more and more legitimate, they eventually had this flagship store on the corner where Nipsey and Sam grew up. But despite that, the police presence actually went up?
Yeah, so Sam told me one story about how there were actually off-duty officers who had come from out of state who were stopping at the store because they're just fans of Nipsey, and they were actually stopped and questioned by LAPD for, you know, according to Sam, basically no reason, right? And these off-duty officers were obviously very surprised by that.
I'm a police officer. Like, what are y'all doing? They're like, oh, shit, sorry. Like, yeah, I'm coming here to buy some clothing with fans of the music. We was in L.A. Fuck, did you even bump us up for?
One thing that Sam told me that really struck with me was that, you know, people who didn't want police interaction knew to just stay away. Folks who are fans of Nipsey, right, who have interactions with the criminal justice system or who have previously had run-ins with the law or had previously been harassed by police would know they just couldn't go to that store because it wasn't worth the risk.
It became like, man, like, nah, don't go up there. Like, that shit is crazy up there. Like, they coming up, pulling in a lot every 10 minutes, nonstop until we close. It turned into, don't go up there if you don't want to get into police contact. If you're on parole, a violation of your parole is getting into police contact.
So Nipsey and Sam said they were hassled when they were selling T-shirts in a chicken shop on the street corner, and they were still hassled when they went legit with a small clothing store. When Nipsey started to become really famous and they had their own brand, and they were talking about opening this big flagship Marathon clothing shop on the corner, did they not just think maybe it would be easier to do it somewhere else where they might not get as much hassle?
They did. I learned this recently when I talked to Sam, that, you know, they had really serious discussions about whether they should just have the store in a different location of LA or somewhere else.
We almost were swayed to just abandon it and open it somewhere else. We knew it would work. But with all that said, I think, you know, Hustle was like, you know, we know what we're supposed to do business-wise, but let's just go ahead and bite the bullet and take whatever comes with it. Fuck that. We're going to stay here.
Ultimately, it was really important to Nipsey to stay. This was his dream, and his goal in life was to be a role model and to show youth that there's a way you can do this and be successful. And in that sense, it was really showing folks, you know, a different way to make money. And it was really just a source of pride But beyond that, you know, Nipsey did so much for the community. He also helped open a co-working space, which was one of the first in South LA. And he really wanted to help inspire innovation and show all these different pathways for people in the neighborhood. This was his life. This was his neighborhood. This was his street corner. And so no matter how much he had to deal with police and other issues on the block, they ultimately decided that they could not leave. And he did not want to leave, you know, no matter how hard it got.
Thousands of fans of Grammy-nominated rapper and community activist Nipsey Hussle are in a state of shock today. They are
more in 2019, at the age of just 33, Nipsey was shot dead. And we learned at his funeral, from a speech that his brother Sam made, that the police's targeting of his store had intensified as time went on.
And y'all know what we went through with the police in that lot. And they, I don't know if anybody knows, we had got a 30-day notice.
Sam told a story about how they brought something called a nuisance probe, essentially how they tried to pressure the landlord to evict Nipsey from the store.
The police, they're putting pressure on us. They said we could lose this property if we don't kick you guys out the lot. I remember this used to be a vacant lot, and people used to be scared to rent the lot. You guys came here, you changed it. People are pulling up. Every lot is rented. And at this point, if you guys still are interested in buying the lot, you know, rather than kick you guys out, we're willing to sell it to you.
And in the end, the only way the brothers could get around this and keep the Marathon clothing store was to actually buy the property from the landlord. Once Nipsey had died, did the police's interest in his business finally end?
It did not. Records showed that after Nipsey's passing, while, you know, city officials were publicly praising him, the city still had their ongoing nuisance case, and they were still interested in removing the store from the neighborhood. And they kept pursuing that, which was obviously devastating for the family dealing with just this unimaginable loss. Ultimately, while dealing with the grief and the fallout from Nipsey's passing, the family decided to just shut down the plaza. And that way, the city could not continue to claim it was a nuisance if it was physically closed, which was devastating for people and you know, is really sad for the family.
Sam, one thing I'm curious about is, as all of this was unfolding, was it clear to anybody why the police were so interested in this little corner of South LA and this store in particular? Is there any chance that it was legitimately a hotspot for crime?
So police claimed that, you know, there were concerns about crime in the area. And of course, there was crime in the area, like there's crime in many streets in Los Angeles. The question, though, is actually how much crime was occurring at the store. And that's a question that we don't fully have answers to. But it seemed to many in the neighborhood, and certainly to Sam and Nipsey, that their store was a positive force, not one that was contributing to crime, but actually quite the opposite. And so, yeah, it wasn't totally clear why they were so interested in the Marathon clothing store.
I noticed you used the past tense there. It wasn't totally clear. Is it clearer now?
Yeah, so unbeknownst to Nipsey and Sam at the time, and something that the public only recently learned, was that Los Angeles Police Department had actually targeted his specific store through a kind of secretive program that was called Operation Laser.
Johanna Buyan, you're a senior tech reporter with The Guardian, and you've been reporting on this story with Sam. Operation Laser, what is it?
So Operation Laser is a program that was launched in 2011, and Laser stood for Los Angeles Strategic Extraction and Restoration. And the whole premise behind it was that if police used historical crime data, they would be able to extract offenders as well as potential crime with the precision of a doctor using laser surgery to remove a tumor. So essentially equating offenders and potential criminals with tumors.
Okay, and how does Operation Laser actually work?
Operation Laser looks at historical crime data to basically try to predict where future crime might occur or who might commit a crime in the future.
Before the cops.
Code 37, stolen vehicle.
Before the manhunt starts.
Gabby, where you at?
Before the guns are even loaded. This is how it begins. One of the most state-of-the-art police systems originates here, with a stack of paper and a black and green screen. It's the data that matters and how it's crunched by a multi-million dollar program to predict crime.
Historical data that they use can include everything from calls to service. So anytime someone called the police to basically say there's someone suspicious here, or we saw, you know, a car that we don't recognize or anything like that, to field interview cards, which are cards that the police filled out every single time that they stopped someone. And so a cop can stop you for jaywalking. They can also stop you for going to a clothing store that they're interested in. And, you know, there's also, of course, the instance where they could stop you for actually committing a crime. But there's many innocuous reasons why a cop might stop you and interview you and take your information down. Regardless, all of that information was going to go into the system.
Zoom in on the desk and you see what it's all about. Those little boxes, they show exactly where the computer predicts crimes will happen in the future. Zones that were drawn up not by a person, but by an algorithm.
Their theory was that where crime had occurred, it might occur again, or a person that they had found to be suspicious might commit a crime in the future.
And when you managed to get your hands on the records of Operation Laser and the way it was applied against Nipsey Hussle, what did it show you?
Well, what it showed us was that this was, for years, an area that they decided to send police presence to and invest their resources into.
Yeah, and that, of course, chimes with what Nipsey's brother Sam said, that they had this sense that the police were always there, to the point where people in the neighborhood would avoid even going to the store if they didn't want to come into contact with the cops. As you looked through the data, did you see how the police were actually operating on this street corner? Like, can you pull out an example of a specific thing the LAPD did there?
They were looking for, in that intersection, someone who was a suspect of a robbery, I believe it was. And the description was extremely, extremely broad. It was a black man between the ages of 16 to 18. And in an effort to look for that person in that intersection, within a very short period of time, I believe it was 2 weeks, they stopped about 100 people, just with the description of a black man between the ages of 16 to 18.
100 people, wow. Do we know why this predictive policing program ended up being directed at Nipsey Hussle?
No, I mean, the public records that we took a look at did not give, you know, an exact reason. But the reason why Nipsey Hussle's story is so emblematic of what's wrong with Operation Laser is that even prior to the intersection that his store was on being targeted explicitly as an anchor point, Nipsey and his family and his friends were being, you know, harassed and targeted. And so it shows and it really illustrates how this program that is based on existing policing decisions, basically just created a vicious cycle where they validated the decisions that they were already making.
So this algorithm that promised to kind of bring a perfectly rational approach to who was going to commit crime actually relied on data that came from people, from the decision of police to enter certain areas and collect data from certain people. And so it sounds like it wasn't the kind of unbiased program that it was promised to be.
Exactly. So algorithms, you know, it's just math. And algorithms can only be as neutral as the inputs and the data that is being put into it. And the data that was being put into it was based on existing policing.
So Nipsey Hussle's store in South LA was just one of these so-called anchor points. Where else did we see targeted in this predictive policing approach?
Because a lot of existing policing already targeted many black and brown communities disproportionately, we saw in the end that Operation Laser also resulted in the targeting of black and brown communities because they were just going back to where they already were.
And is there any evidence that this kind of system actually works to suppress crime?
The LAPD continues to believe that it's an effective system, but the LAPD's own police commission actually called into question the biased information and biased data that Operation Laser was based on. About a month after Nipsey Hussle died, LAPD ultimately shuttered the program.
Okay, so this specific program was shut down in 2019, but I'm guessing this wasn't the end of predictive policing. How widespread is that approach?
Yeah, the Los Angeles Police Department was actually a pioneer in data-driven policing. So when they announced and when they launched Operation Laser in 2011, there were very few other programs like it. But according to them and according to its architects, they said that it was a major and massive success. They said that it helped them, that it made them more productive, it made them more effective. And so, of course, a lot of other police departments were really hungry to get their hands on this, you know, magical equation and this magical software that suddenly made all of their policing a lot easier. And now, if you fast forward 10 years later, police are not only hungry for data-driven policing systems and software, there's also a very, very rich and willing commercial sector of the tech industry that is extremely happy and is hungry for these police contracts. One company that we looked into was Voyager.
Keeping the world safe is an incredible challenge, requiring constant vigilance. At any moment, the smallest interaction or communication could yield the critical insight to taking down a criminal network or preventing a tragedy.
Their whole premise is that they look very specifically at people's social media profiles in order to see if they're friends with anyone who's suspicious or if they're posting anything suspicious. And their entire premise is that they help police detect emerging threats.
Voyager Analytics. Simple, fast, profound.
I was thinking about that even if we aren't stopped by police and have our data fed into a system, we're all actually putting so much information about ourselves into the public sphere anyway, online. And all of that is potentially fodder for these kinds of police intelligence systems. So is that what's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're just seeing sort of the digital version of what happened to Nipsey Hussle. The company that I mentioned, Voyager, I mean, they even attempt to determine if there is some sort of Islamic fundamentalism in your system, basically, based on what Instagram accounts you follow and what types of things that you tweet. In one case study that we looked at, this person was just following accounts that posted Muslim content. And look, I'm Muslim. What they basically described was just my dad. Like, it's just an average Muslim man or Muslim person and some who is active in the Muslim community on social media. And they, much like Operation Laser, had sort of this malignant data that they were feeding into the system. This similarly, Voyager had these inputs that were biased, right? They were saying that, oh, we're going to tell our algorithm or we're going to tell our artificial intelligence system that these things are things worth flagging and could potentially be a sign of fundamentalism. And those things are actually protected activity and just examples of, someone expressing their faith.
Is this the future of policing?
Yes, 100%. It's not even just companies that explicitly and overtly are trying to surveil people for police. There's also companies that we engage with and interact with on a daily basis. Amazon, Google, Facebook, in a lot of cases, have expanded and grown to an extent in all of the industries and spaces that they're in, that there isn't really a ton of other room for growth in the revenues streams that they already have. And so they have to look for new avenues of growth. And one place where there are seemingly limitless funds for contracts is in law enforcement, as well as just the government generally.
Okay, but in the case of Operation Laser and the LAPD, that was reviewed and it was discontinued. So that should be pretty reassuring, right?
You would think. But no, what actually ended up happening is that just a year later, the LAPD introduced a completely new program that was community driven. It would be more transparent. It would be something that they worked really closely with stakeholders and people, you know, within the community with. And, you know, it was supposed to be something that actually reformed Operation Laser and tried to answer a lot of the concerns that people had about those programs. But the records that we saw, as well as some of the public brochures about this new program, show that it recreates a lot of the same aspects and features of Operation Laser that people have issues with. It's just renaming existing units or that were under Operation Laser as something that is a little bit more palatable to people who are opposed to it.
Coming up, police pressure led to the closure of Nipsey's business. What next for the store that was so key to his legacy? Sam, did Nipsey Hussle or his family know about Operation Laser and how it had seemingly homed in right onto their store?
They did not. When I told Sam, Nipsey's brother, about this, he had never heard the term Operation Laser, which I think is very revealing, right? It speaks to a sort of lack of basic transparency on this.
And what did he say when he found out?
He said, basically, I'm not surprised, which was something I heard from actually a lot of folks I talked to who, you know, were impacted in various ways by Operation Laser, because it really matched up with their lived experiences of policing.
You know, something I find a bit sad about this story is that when you look at Nipsey's life and legacy, like, he managed to forge a new path for himself. He wasn't a prisoner of his past, and he was also really committed to finding pathways for other people from his neighborhood to do the same thing, to break the cycle of criminality. And the whole vision for his store was to be a business and a positive presence in the neighborhood. But it sounds like, in a way, and maybe partly because of this policing strategy, he was never really able to escape that past, that he and the people around him, those who came to his shop, ended up locked in that same cycle of conflict with the police. Like, this technology is so powerful, but the one thing predictive policing can't predict is when someone has sincerely decided to take a new direction.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think what we saw through these records and through these stories is that Operation Laser created a lot of harm for the communities that were impacted by them. You know, these interactions with the criminal justice system can make life harder for people in all sorts of small and big ways, whether it leads you to incarceration or whether it leads to more things on your record or whether it just leads to difficulties on a day-to-day basis. And so I think you could talk to lots of folks in the community and folks, you know, who were supporters of what Nipsey was doing, who will tell you that they feel like LAPD really hampered that and that LAPD was dedicated to kind of stopping that effort, even though what they were doing was legit. It seems LAPD just made that a lot harder for Nipsey and for the family.
And you said that Nipsey's brother Sam ends up having to close the shop to the public. What's happening with it now? Do they have any plans to open it back up?
He decided that they didn't want to reopen the Marathon store specifically there. You know, this is the site of a tragedy. This is the site where he died, where his brother died. And I think that, you know, he didn't want it to just be sort of another retail location. He wanted it to be something intentional that really honored Nipsey's legacy.
The store has to, for us, that's the first Marathon store, but opening it back up where my brother was killed, you know, back for business, like nothing happened, can't do it. But the goal is eventually to, you know, create like a youth center there, create like a weekend program for the youth where they can come in and teachers can come and teach them like music production. Nip used to go to the Watch Towers when he was little, and they had a program there, a youth program, and they were teaching the kids like music production, and it was free. And a lot of the teachers would come and volunteer and do it for free. But everybody out of that program, including my brother, ended up, you know, pursuing a successful music career. And so just us looking at that, we like, man, this shit is crazy. Like, just a little effort and a little, you know, resources toward, you know, directed towards the youth, it really makes a big impact in their life. So for us, I think that would be the best that would be the best thing that we could put there. It's like in the vein of what Hustle stood for. Once the haters, add cuffs and maces. Call us dumb and it's cause our culture is contagious. Third generation South Central gangbangers that live long enough to see it change. Think it's time we make arrangements. Finally wiggle out they maces. Find me out in different places. When I spoke by the door, this the infiltration. Double back dressed in blue laces.
That was Nipsey Hussle's brother, Sam Asgadom. Thanks very much to him and to Sam Levin and Johanna Buyan, both correspondents with Guardian US. The research that revealed the details of Operation Laser came from a report by the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition. You can read Johanna and Sam's articles on exactly what that report found at theguardian.com. We contacted the LAPD, but they declined to comment. In response to Sam and Johanna's reports, Voyager Labs said in a statement, quote, "As a company, we follow the laws of all the countries in which we do business. We also have confidence that those with whom we do business are law-abiding public and private organizations." They added, "Our products are search and analytics engines that employ artificial intelligence and machine learning with explainability." And that's it for today. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Mythley Rao and Phil Maynard. Back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.